Welcome to the MMA Roadshow's Read for Manscaped. That's right. As you hardcore listeners know, support for the MMA Roadshow this month has come from Manscaped, who is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. We appreciate the support from Manscaped.com, and we would love for it to keep coming. So, listen, you need this product. I know you need this product. You listen to this, you're thinking, I'm not sure. Come on. We've all had a situation where we've nicked the nads, put a little crack in the family jewels, sliced the old Dong Young Kim, had a little tear in the twins, the yam bag, the old ham and eggs, the pork dumplings, o en espanol, cojones, huevos, pelotes. Who hasn't been there, huh? You're trying to keep yourself looking good, but you're using some gear that's not meant for the design, and you end up putting a little slice in the old kangaroo apples, the devil's figs, the librarian's hand warmers, penis boobs. Where do they come up with it? Crotch nugs. The broveries. You hurt the old two amigos. Your marble bags. The landing gear. My favorite, chin warmers. Listen, that's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. Their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology, so this trimmer won't nick or snag your nuts. Manscaping accents are finally a thing of the past. Listen, the trimmer is phenomenal. I enjoy it. It's great. I mean, it's not something we talk about a whole lot, but come on, fellas. You got to keep yourself looking good, and you don't want to use the same trimmer on your face that you're using on your balls. That's just nasty. So you want to get this. I'm telling you, the Lawnmower 2.0 is the way to go, and it's not all they have, by the way. Manscaped also has the Crop Preserver, the anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? I'm telling you, make sure you pick up the Crop Preserver as well. It's a life-changing experience, man. You get yourself all cleaned up with that Lawnmower 2.0. You get the broveries all rubbed down with the Crop Preserver. Everything's feeling good. And right now, as part of the support of the MMA Roadshow, you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code ROAD. That's R-O-A-D. Come on now. At manscaped.com. That's right. 20% off and free shipping with the code ROAD at manscaped.com. Come on now. Last time, 20% off and free shipping, manscaped.com. Always use the right tools for the job. Your balls, the landing gear, your marble bags, the old ham and eggs, all of them. The old Dong Young Kim. Even the maestro. They'll thank you. Now on to the show. Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 235. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me, but we'll get to all that shortly. He is going to be on. He is one half of a big Bellator weekend. He's out in Los Angeles, California. But right now, we're going to go all the way over to Europe. Dublin, Ireland, my man Simon Head, where I'm sure a Guinness or two has probably been consumed since you touched down in Dublin, Ireland. I don't care what they say. It does taste different over there. It is phenomenal. How are you doing, my man?
I can attest to that. I'm staring at one right now. So I have my laptop open. We're in a dimly lit bar in the Gibson Hotel in Dublin, which is the, if you remember, John, it's the hotel directly opposite the Three Arena.
Sure.
We were unable to get an Uber back to the host hotel, and it was absolutely throwing it down with rain as it likes to do here. So we just ran across the road and set ourselves up here in a deserted bar, pint of Guinness on the go. All is well.
Good for you, my man. That's the way to get it done. Well, let's just get into it, man. I mean, all right, look, you know, we're sitting down on a Thursday night to record this episode like we always do. This is a Friday fight card. So, you know, I don't want to take a ton of time breaking down the X's and O's of a card that people might be, you know, potentially watching before they even get a chance to listen to this. But I did want to get a sense of kind of what the vibe is like in Dublin. I mean, this is not a UFC event. I don't mean that as a slight. I just mean, you know, of course, there was the legendary UFC event there where you had so many people fighting. And now you're really just down to Conor McGregor in the UFC as far as, you know, pure Irish goes. So to me, this would seem like, you know, granted, not a Conor fight, but potentially a big weekend, you know, especially if you're a hardcore fan of MMA. I mean, is that vibe kind of permeating the area or not?
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of weird because we've been holed up in the host hotel, which is actually outside of Dublin. We're kind of out by the airport. So we're in there, and all of the fighters, or most of the fighters, are based there. So we're a little bit sort of incubated from the outside world. We just had the ceremonial weigh-ins at the three arena, and to be honest, the turnout wasn't that great. But it's mid to late afternoon on a Friday. The weather's terrible, so there are sort of extenuating factors. But the fight card is absolutely packed with up and coming Irish talent and established Irish talent, and it's just kind of like the next wave of Irish MMA. If you remember when Conor first burst into the UFC, he was one of a group of guys. He had Paddy Hulahan, Cathal Pendred. Gunnar Nelson was kind of lumped in with that group as well. Neil Seary. We had a good group of guys who were all coming through together, and one by one, they've all gradually sort of drifted away. This is the next group, and I'm kind of excited to see how these guys do. I think there's a lot of talent there. There's some definite personality and star power among them. The question now is, can they make that jump?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, as far as Ireland specifically, it seems like they've got, you know, some kind of a working relationship with John Kavanaugh and SBG Ireland. You know, there's definitely a nice flow of talent going in. But I got to say, Simon, I was a little, you know, I hate to say maybe hesitant or doubtful or whatever. But, you know, when Bellator first announced their plans in Europe, which, of course, you know, made sense. They wanted to be able to hold shows in prime time, right? And to me, I thought that made sense in terms of, you know, they just wanted to get TV deals and all those networks, which is smart. You're trying to generate money. But I wasn't really sure how the look of the product was going to be and what kind of position they were going to make and how much real investment they were going to do in the market in Europe. But granted, I'm sitting here from the United States taking a look at it, but I feel like they're really investing in the sport. I mean, from this fight card on to, you know, the ones that have been announced over Milan, and then, of course, they just announced a show in your backyard in London as well. Am I right in that it feels like Bellator is actually making some pretty big strides over there in the European market?
Yeah, they are. I mean, they've hired David Green, who used to run a promotion here in the UK called Bama. So he's sort of heading up the Bellator European team. He's the head of Europe for Bellator. By the end of this year, they will have held six events in Europe. London will be the sixth, Milan the fifth. And next year, they're talking about trying to up that to as many as 10. So they're really looking to sort of get themselves fully established and to become sort of the go-to big promotion here in Europe, where they can just go back to regular haunts like Dublin, like London. They've got a good relationship with the SSE Arena in Wembley, and that's where they're going back later this year. Obviously, they've got a relationship here in Dublin. And they're branching out and looking at new markets as well. So I think, you know, there's a lot of reason for optimism when it comes to Bellator. And for European fans or fans who like to watch a bit of international MMA on your side of the pond, then there's going to be a bit more of it by the looks of it. And, you know, for the likes of me over here, looking to get on the road and cover some more events in the next year or two. You know, this is perfect for me. So I actually get out on the road and cover some of it. And they're not like lip service events where they just stick one star at the top. You know, there's some real quality now, and it's domestic quality, but they're also bringing over some of the big names as well. And it's a nice mix.
Yeah, no question about it. I do wonder, and I think it was the London card maybe that alerted me more than anything. Is this problematic for, say, like a Cage Warriors? I mean, I feel like every name they announced is a Cage Warriors veteran or a Cage Warriors staple. I mean, are they in trouble, or is it just going to be – I mean, I guess it would be a good thing for these fighters if you've got – I hate to brand it regional-level MMA because Bellator as a whole is not regional, of course, but, you know, this extension of them is regional. I mean, I guess it's a good thing for the fighters if they got options, but is this bad for, like, a Cage Warriors, for instance?
I don't know if it is. I think if you take a look at it as a whole, I mean, Cage Warriors has sort of marketed themselves almost as being the go-to sort of launch pad if you want to get into the UFC. You know, they're on UFC Fight Pass. They've got an excellent working relationship with the UFC, and they've got a proven track record of delivering people who move into the UFC. And, you know, they go in and invariably do reasonably well. You know, they don't go in and they're one and done. They stick around, and some of them go and do, you know, really well in the UFC, Conor being an ideal example of that. But I think what you've got now, Bellator didn't have that. And by creating this European arm, they're effectively putting themselves in that position as well as at the top. So they've created like another talent pipeline there, and it gives the fighters over on this side of the pond more options. But what you, I think what you'll still see is pretty much what you have now, where the guys who are in Cage Warriors are in there largely because they want to get into the UFC. And the guys who are in Bellator, who move across to Bellator, can see a natural smooth progression from being on a Bellator Europe card to eventually being on one of the number pay-per-view Bellator cards and fighting over stateside. So I just think it's just another pipeline and an opportunity for European fighters to make it at the top level. I think it's great for the guys over here. But I don't necessarily think it dilutes anything too much, because Cage Warriors, with the way they hold events, they can't put on, you know, 15, 20 events a year. So what, you know, with Bellator holding between 6 and 10 European events, it just means there's more MMA over here. There's more chances for people to fight, more opportunities for people to make a living in the sport. So I think it's all positive, to be honest.
Yeah, and I tell you what, it gives Bellator another option of, you know, signing people very, very early. You know, I think that's one thing they've done really, really well. I mean, look, they're still building those people up, and it's tough to transition, you know, an 0-0 fighter all the way to a star, as we've seen. I mean, certainly, you know, the MVP build has taken a long time, and they've taken some criticism for that. But, you know, Bellator does have the option and honestly, the need to sign people very early in their career to kind of keep them away from the UFC and to build these homegrown talents. And I guess this honestly just gives them one more, you know, opportunity to sign people very, very early in their career. So, you know, you might see people getting looks on a big show a little earlier than they might have normally, when they might have had to kind of fight it out more on the regional stage in Europe first.
Absolutely. And actually, a story that I found out today from a colleague of ours, Jerry McCarthy, who is predominantly a photographer, but he also does video interviews. He's got his own little outlet called KO Media over in Ireland. Bellator signed Soren Back, who's a two-division Cage Warriors champion. And he's going to be fighting in London against former two-weight Bama champion Terry Brazier. So it's interesting that they've signed a Cage Warriors guy straight into Bellator, because normally the route is Cage Warriors into the UFC. But something that Jerry mentioned to me that hasn't been picked up other than in an interview that he did is that he told me that Soren told him that the UFC offered him a fight in Copenhagen this weekend. And he turned it down and has signed for Bellator instead, and will make his Bellator debut in London in November. So that's a really interesting line, because that's a fighter who had the option of fighting in the UFC and has instead decided to go with Bellator. So, you know, and, you know, there could be a whole number of reasons for that, whether they be financial, whether they be contract length or whatever. But I think it's notable to sort of mention that, you know, there is the possibility for even the guys in Cage Warriors can move across to Bellator, or the guys at Bellator could end up jumping and moving across elsewhere. But yeah, I think it's quite a high profile one, given that he was a two division champ in Cage Warriors. And rather than going up to the UFC, which apparently he was offered, he's decided to go the other route, and he's going to be fighting at Bellator London in November.
Man, that's big. You know, it's one thing, I think, if they can change the kind of feel of it, because I do always say, listen, I don't think there's any, you know, 15-year-old kid punching a bag and doing wrestling rounds and grappling rounds saying, you know, one day I'm going to be a Bellator champion. You know what I mean? Like everybody on the upswing is dreaming of that UFC belt. And I think that's probably going to be the way it remains for a while. But listen, man, there are financial opportunities available. And in some ways, it might suit you better. You know, if Bellator can kind of hold your hand a little bit more, or deal with you maybe a little bit more personally, or, you know, suit things to you a little bit. I mean, if you could kind of get over the fact that maybe your dream was to be UFC champion and realize that you might be better off in Bellator, man, you know, you may be able to do some great things for yourself and your family and your future.
Yeah. I mean, it's that magic word, options. Mm-hmm. You know, the best thing for any up and coming fighter or anyone in any career is to have options, right? If you've only got one path and one option in front of you, it's kind of win or bust, isn't it? You've got to go and make that happen, however it is. But if you've got options in front of you, you can then work things to your advantage and you know, make the best of things. So, as I say, I mean, having Bellator expanding over here in Europe, the UFC obviously will continue what they're doing in Europe. They've got a strong foothold over here. And Cage Warriors being strong on a domestic / regional level as well. I think, you know, MMA is in a reasonable spot. And obviously you've got the likes of KSW who are doing well, producing some good events. And, you know, they've got some big names over there as well. And they're looking to work with the likes of Bellator as well. So there's all sorts, you know, it's much more, I think if you're an MMA fighter on the up here in Europe, this is the best era you could possibly be in terms of having options to eventually go on and make a real career of it.
Wow, that's big. That's true. I think you're right. I hadn't thought about it, but I think you're right. All right, we're saying lots of good things about Bellator. Let's mention some bad, and let me ask how bad it is over there. Now, we talked about these dual events. It's Bellator 227. It's Bellator Europe 4. There's some, you know, prelims and some place, and then it goes to another place, and then it over here it's confusing. I'm not going to lie. To see all three of these cards, so to speak, the prelims and the two main cards, it's tough. You got to bounce around a little bit. Is it that tough over there as well, or is it suited better for the local market?
I think it's probably suited a little bit better, but we are still living in an era where we've got tape delayed fights, which I to this day I cannot understand. But we've got two TV deals in the UK. I can talk probably best from a UK perspective, because that's obviously where I live. The Bellator Dublin portion of the card, or the Bellator Europe 4 portion of the card, that is going to be, that's basically three fights. That's all it is, three fights. It's the James Gallagher, Roman Salazar fight. It's Michael Page versus Richard Kiley, Ryan Scope versus Peter Queeley. Three really good fights. And that is basically the entire Bellator Europe 4 event. So I think I find that the easiest way to sort of process it in my head. Separate those three fights off. They're going to be shown live on Channel 5 in the UK, which is a terrestrial TV channel. Everybody can get it. You don't need a subscription. It's free. All is well. That will be shown live from 10 p.m. UK time. So it's ideal time to watch fights over in the UK. Yep. All the other stuff, the main card from Bellator 227, which is five fights long, that will be shown on Sky Sports, which is a great partner to have here in the UK. But it's going to be shown at 2 a.m. On tape delay, because I'll tell you what, we're not going to be in there at 2 a.m. So at least, I hope not. But yeah.
You jinxed yourself right there.
yeah. We'll still be waiting for a cab outside at 2 a.m. But yeah, no. But yeah, so those five fights, that's the Benson Henderson Miles Jury fight and the four fights under that, they're going to be on Sky Sports. And I think the reason that that's on delay is partly to do with the relationship with Paramount and DAZN in the States. Mm. So I think they're marrying it up with that. They're kind of trying to serve multiple paymasters here when it comes to TV deals. And I think they're trying to keep everybody happy. And what you end up with is kind of a sort of a half-baked solution that everybody's kind of happy and everyone's kind of frustrated at the same time. So it's a bit of a juggling act. And then you've got all the prelims, which they're going to show via their app. And I think, are we streaming those?
I think we might be streaming.
Yep. So, you know, you can catch those on MMA Junkie. But so, you know, you have to be, you know, this is MMA Junkie, our website, and it's a packed weekend of MMA. This is a good weekend if you're an MMA Junkie, but you've also got to be, you've got to be committed. You've got to have all your remote controls ready, all your streaming services ready. Your Wi-Fi needs to be on point, because if you want to watch all this stuff, you've got to be prepared to jump through a few hoops. It's just the way it is. It's not ideal. In an ideal world, it'll all be on ideally one channel, or one channel with a streaming platform for the prelims. And then you can just park yourself in front of the telly, put your feet up with a cold one, and watch it top to tail.
Yeah.
But it's not quite like that.
It's, you know, listen, I'll give them credit. I mean, as you said, they're trying to serve, you know, two different broadcast partners in two different parts of the world. And I guess you have to give them some credit for being smart about it. I mean, this saves them some money financially, right? I mean, they are fulfilling live deals on both networks and not having to pay two arena fees, not having to pay two setups, not having to pay, all those different things. I mean, Glory does the same thing, right? I know you're familiar with their product as well. Well, they'll change the entire canvas during a break in the intermission and tape another show, you know? So it's a smart use of resources. I guess, as you said, we just have to realize it may not be ideal, but it makes sense in a certain way, and we got to deal with it. So, all right, let me ask you quickly about the weigh-ins this morning. As you said, the ceremonial weigh-ins are wrapped. This morning, the official weigh-ins, I was up kind of in the middle of the night watching with you guys while you were on site. I am not trying to Well, let me just start by saying this. The Bellator has to, much like the UFC, they have to self-regulate in some markets that don't have commissions all in place yet. It does seem like around the world, you know, more and more commissions are being set up, more and more mixed martial arts associations that work with the MMAF are being set up, which is great. In the meantime, you got to kind of self-regulate. And Bellator has used Mike Mazzulli for a long time for this. Now, I am not trying to call into question his ethics. He is the president of the Association of Boxing Commissions. He's been around the game for a long time. He's got passion about it. That said, were you a little bit uncomfortable with the weigh-ins this morning? Maybe it was just me, but, you know, Miles Jury comes in at 156.2 for a lightweight contest. Now, I think we can all admit that 0.2 isn't that big of a deal in a fight, but we have rules and weight limits for a reason. I know you guys in the room were all expecting him to re-weigh. He doesn't, and we find out that the fight is official anyway, and Mike Mazzulli tells you later on, hey, you know, we just decided to spot him the 0.2 pounds. I mean, it's you know, it's kind of insignificant. We don't want him cutting more weight. We're here for fighter safety. Let's carry on. And then you have this, you know, a similar situation, but potentially a little bit more egregious in the fact that, you know, Salazar comes in for a 140-pound catchweight fight at 145.4, significantly over. And at first, it seems like there's not even going to be a fine for the guy, and they're just going to move it up to a featherweight fight. Later, James Gallagher takes to social media to say, that's not the case at all. I'm not okay with that. And once again, you know, you were on the spot as a reporter. You tracked Mazzulli down. He said, no, there is going to be a 20% fine. And that seems fine, but, I mean, it still seems like a really big miss. And I know he came in on short notice. So I there's a lot of extenuating circumstances here, and there's a lot of variables. But I don't know. It just – It seemed a little loose and fast to me, man. And maybe that's because I'm used to dealing with the Nevada State Athletic Commission, the California State Athletic Commission. I'm used to things being maybe even more rigorous than they need to be. But I don't know. You were on the scene there. Give me your thoughts. Did it feel a little weird? And again, I'm not trying to call Mazzulli's integrity into question. That's not what I'm doing here. But is it something that maybe they need to look at? Are we doing this the right way?
Yeah, I mean, I was in the room, and I probably had, over the course of the weigh-ins, probably five or six conversations with Mike over various things, whether it be confirming that these contract weight, which they don't like using the word catch weight, they're calling them contract weight because they are going to be contracted to be at that weight, even if the contracts are rewritten after the weigh-ins, which is effectively what happened with the Gallagher fight. So they're still calling it a contract weight. And I was saying, okay, if it's a contract weight, does that mean that you can't miss by one? Do you still get the one extra and all this? So I was talking to him about technicalities of all this sort of stuff. But the Miles Jury thing, he was like the second or third guy on the stage, on the scale, I think. And he missed by 0.2, and no one seemed to notice at first. And I looked at him and went, he's missed weight. And I looked up, and like the commission were carrying on like nothing was wrong. I'm like, he missed. And I said, and Mazzulli was like, yeah, he's coming back. I'm like, okay, cool. Because my first thought was, he's missed by 0.2 of a pound, and he didn't even weigh in with the towel. So he could have weighed in with the towel and probably passed there and then. It's a fair chance that he probably could have just had another go with the towel and been absolutely fine. So the fact that, but we were told, oh yeah, he's got to come back. So we just, you know, we had a little asterisk by his name, missed weight. We need to keep him in mind, you know, a little bit later in the session, because he'll have to come back and weigh in again. And of course it got to the end of the weigh in and he hadn't come back. And, one of the other Bellator staffers, who I don't know his name, very tall guy. He's always there. But he came out and I'm like, well, where's Miles? Is he coming back out? And he went, he was 156. I'm like, no, he wasn't. He was 156.2. He went, no, he was 156. I said, he was 156.2. We've got it. We've got it on video. And so he disappeared off back, and eventually Mike Mazzulli came back out and said, yeah, we're going to spot him the 0.2. You know, it's not a title fight. You know, we don't want him to be cutting any unnecessary weight. You know, it's just, at the end of the day, this is about fighter safety. Now, all of that, from a common sense standpoint, can't argue with any of it. It was just the fact that we were told like an hour and a half earlier, he's coming back. And then when he didn't, it just seemed a bit weird. Yeah. It just seemed a bit weird. Whether the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing, and there was some cross lines in the messaging we were being given, or what, I don't know. But all I know was that things weren't quite right, so we had to ask a couple of questions. And then you had the situation with Salazar, which is obviously a much more noticeable miss. You know, Gallagher came in and hit, like, I think it's like 138 or one, yeah, no, 139.8 he did. Made weight with ease. You know, he would have been preparing to make 35 until about a week ago. So he was probably breathing easy during fight week, knowing he didn't have to cut so much. Salazar comes in on a week's notice, pretty much. Looked absolutely fine at media day when we chatted to him. And then when it got to like the last half an hour and he still hadn't come in, I thought, okay, this is going to be tricky. He's going to be over. And then he came in and he was hugely over. Came in at 45.4 for what was a 140-pound contract weight, catch weight, whatever you want to call it, weight fight. He was apologizing on the scale, and it's on the video on MMA Junkie. Very slurry, and it wasn't. He didn't look good. He didn't look depleted, like totally depleted. But he was talking, he was slurring, he just wasn't, you know, the alarm bells go off, you think, okay, this isn't good.
Yep.
And he disappeared off backstage, and obviously the commissioners went off backstage to talk to him. And I assume that this one might be in jeopardy, because this isn't necessarily just a conversation with Gallagher's team. This is a commission safety issue. You know, are they happy that he's okay? So they went back and they obviously were satisfied that he was okay. And then they came out and said, right, we're going to make this a featherweight fight. So it's going to be a contract weight at 145 pounds. I said, so that's a featherweight fight then. They said, well, yeah, you can call it that if you like. So, okay. So basically, and you know, I'm probably oversimplifying it to say it like this, but basically the way this worked today was you went in there having signed a contract to fight at a certain weight. Two guys missed weight, so they rewrote the contracts. That's basically what they did. They rewrote the contracts and the fights go ahead. Gallagher's obviously, or through his team, have decided that you know they wanted some compensation for keeping the fight alive and carrying on. So I tracked down Mike Mazzulli. I grabbed, he was in his shorts and t-shirt with his earbuds in, heading to the gym, and I sort of collared him before he got to the lift. And I said, well, what's the deal? What's going on? And he didn't know. He said, when I get the rejig contracts, then I'll know what any additional agreements have been added in the contract. And he came back in about 2-3 minutes later, having gone and found them, and said it's 20%. So it's not ideal. You know, I mean, from the situation of they're looking to keep things going, I would assume they're also looking to look after the safety of the fighters. Both of those things are completely fine. They don't always work well together. So I think the most important thing is to be as transparent as you can, and for all of these rules or wrinkles or whatever to be known in advance, so that it doesn't look like they're making it up on the fly as they go, which they might not have been, but at times it felt like it.
Yeah, that's exactly the point I arrived at as well. Again, I think they want to do right, and I think they have the right intentions in mind. And I'm not saying anything they executed was right. It's just the way you do it, and hopefully it's something they'll at least consider and think about. Because look, they're trying to be on the same level as the UFC. I mean, you know, they'll never say we're taking on the UFC. I mean, that's not a Scott Coker way of doing business. But at the end of the day, they're trying to be considered a similar product. And you know, I just think you want to be as transparent and clear as possible. So, all right, I said we wouldn't spend too much time talking about, you know, X's and O's, because I don't know when people are going to get a chance to listen to it. But I did want to ask you real quick about just some key fights. Benson Henderson, give me an idea what you took from him this week. I mean, man, it wasn't that long ago. I feel like Benson was kind of left for dead, man. And now he's on and heck, I might have been one of those people that were leaving him for dead, to be honest with you, and saying that his best days were behind. Now he's on a 3-fight winning streak. You know, and you know, it turns out he was dealing with some injuries and things that he feels like he's past now. Now he's got Miles Jury in his first post UFC appearance. You know, what'd you take about Benson's energy this week and where he's at in his career and kind of this matchup with Miles Jury?
Yeah, if you just take a look purely at his wins and losses since he's joined Bellator, he looks a bit patchy, doesn't it? You know, he's 4-3 he is heading into this one. But if you look at his first loss was against Koreshkov on his debut, and that was when Koreshkov was pretty much at his peak.
Yep.
But his only other two losses came against Michael Chandler and Patricky Pitbull, both by split decision. So, you know, by definition, you know, they were close competitive fights, and he's gone on and won three straight since then. I asked him about how he's feeling about momentum and stuff, and even though those two back-to-back split decisions, you know, because they were close fights, he doesn't take those as particularly damaging in terms of how he was feeling moving forward, and he's obviously racked up three wins since then. He seems like he's in a good place. He's always super chilled out, his Benson. You know, he's not the sort of guy to sort of be ranting and raving too much in interviews. He was very relaxed chatting to us this week, and he seems like he's in a good spot. I mean, I talked to him about whether he might want to go back over to Saitama one day and compete for Rising and maybe look to win another belt, because he won the UFC belt in the Saitama Arena. So, you know, there's a nice little symmetry to that, and he kind of had a nice little grin on his face when I mentioned that. And I think they're going over and I think he's got his wife from Korea.
That's right. His family, isn't it?
Sorry, right. Yeah. So I knew he had Asian heritage in his family and stuff. So yes, I mean, going back over and potentially fighting over there in one of those crossover events. You know, they always got the big New Year's Eve event. He might well have his eye on that. So that's something to look out for moving forward. But he seemed in a good spot, and he was complimentary about Miles Jury, but. You know, it's interesting to know what his motivation is now. Like, he didn't really talk too much about titles that much. All he said was competition. He just wants competition at this stage in his career. So he's coming into Dublin. I think he's relishing being somewhere new. He knows the atmosphere will be a lively one. And he's looking to put on a show. You know, it's one of those things. You know, Benson has been around a long time. He's one of the OGs. He's competed in a WEC during its prime and was the lightweight champion there. He came over to the UFC, lightweight champion there. You know, if he ended up collecting the set and ended up with a Bellator lightweight belt at some stage, I mean, that, you know, that's a Hall of Fame worthy career right there.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, listen, I want to get your thoughts as well quickly on James Gallagher. Man, listen, he's been criticized all along his career as being a Conor clone of sorts. I mean, maybe not to the level of a Dylan Danis where it's you know, too over the top ridiculous, but, you know, he's been criticized as just being, you know, a knockoff version of Conor. But I got to say, man, the times that I've been around him, there's an energy about this kid that I really do like. Of course, he did have the setback, and I think he's handled it well and recovered from it well. But I guess he's probably always going to be a polarizing figure just because he is not afraid to be brash, to be bold, to be confident. What's your take on this kid?
Honestly, you know, we've covered him a fair few times now, and I've had the chance to sort of sit down and chat with him a few times. One-on-one, talk to him, you won't find a nicer guy in the sport. He's engaging, he's fun, he's always got time for you. Like, you're in the fighter hotel, he'll come up to you and say, "Oh, how you doing, mate?" You know, blah blah blah. He's just a nice kid. But when he's in fight mode, he just turns a switch on and he adopts this persona, which I guess is one of the things that people don't like. But that's just the way he goes about his business. You know, I mean, Michael Bisping used to turn into an absolute nightmare when he wanted to fight, you know, somebody. He would get into a state where he would literally hate the guts of the person he was fighting, even though he might not have anything against him at all. You know, it's just different fighters get themselves up for fights in different ways. But James Gallagher, I've always found him to be a perfectly nice, decent lad. Obviously, there are elements to some of the things he's done in the past which haven't always painted him in a great light. I mean, he's, you know, the Ricky Bandejas fight. That was like the ultimate sort of come down, wasn't it? You know, yep. he was giving it loads before the fight and then got knocked out. There are similarities with Conor, and, you know, some of the other fighters on this card have got similar bravado and confidence. Kiefer Crosby is not shy of confidence. He looks the part. He talks the part, and he's a very good fighter. I'm looking forward to seeing him this weekend, but. You know, they're all cut from that same cloth when it comes to the sort of the they've sort of almost sort of read the same motivational book or something. I don't know what it is, but I mean, as a guy, Gallagher is a decent guy. I think on his Twitter account, I think he retweeted something from somebody where they basically said all these people that say they hate James Gallagher, none of those people have actually met him. The people who meet him actually think he's an okay guy. So You know, and that's kind of what it's like. I mean, the guy in the cage isn't necessarily the guy who walks around and his everyday life, you know. And yeah. that's what you get with James Gallagher. I mean, he's a nice guy. I've got a lot of time for him.
Yeah, and you know what? That's probably not the most unhealthy thing to be a different guy in the cage and out. You know what I mean? That's A, you got to sell yourself, but B, man, you got to be in a special mindset to lock yourself in a cage with another human being hell-bent on doing harm to you. So, you know, to go in there with some degree of bravado and self-confidence probably isn't the worst thing in the world. So, listen, I don't want to cut into your Guinness time too much, man, and I feel like I've already done enough, but I want to get one last thought from you, and that is on the return of Michael Venom Page facing Richard Kiley, a much less experienced fighter, but one that does not seem to be shying away from the moment. There's is this kind of a grudge match? I mean, this is turning into something kind of interesting. On the one hand, you got MVP saying, you know, this guy's not on my level, and oh, by the way, I'm going to fight again in November in London. Meanwhile, Richard is saying, oh, this man has made a horrible miscalculation.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at it on paper, you've got 14-1 Michael Venom Page against 3-1 Richard Kiley. Numbers for numbers, it looks like a mismatch, right? But Richard Kiley has come in with some sort of bulletproof confidence. When he fought for Bama, he called himself the face of Bama. Now he's with Bellator and has one fight under his belt. He's calling himself the face of Bellator. And he does it with a glint in his eye and a grin on his face. So I started talking to him. And in media day, and I said, right, I'm here with Richard Kiley, blah, blah, blah. I asked him a first question, and he just sort of stopped me and went, you forgot to address me as the face of Bellator there, didn't you? I was like, and we had a bit of a joke about it. And as it turned out, Abby wanted me to move and shoot from the other side of his camera anyway. So I said, all right, we'll start again. But we left that bit in, partly at my own expense to sort of take the mickey out of me, but also to sort of just show that, you know, we're having a bit of a laugh with it. But yeah, no, he's calling himself the face of Bellator. He freely admits that he decided he would seek out this fight with MVP. He said all the things that he thought he needed to say to sort of push his buttons and get the fight. And he got the fight. I think he described it as he cast his line and caught a big fish. Page thinks he's got himself a nice, easy tune-up fight, and he's sorely mistaken. And he's asking the question, he's like, why is a guy who's 14-1 and lost in the semi-finals of the featherweight welterweight Grand Prix, fighting a 3-1 guy who's 1-0 in Bellator, who's had one fight in Bellator? You know what I mean? That question is a valid question to ask.
Yep.
But clearly, you know, the personalities have clashed. They had an interesting face-off at the ceremonials today as well. It's going to be an interesting one. The fact that Kylie has such bulletproof confidence, along with MVP, whose confidence seems not to have taken a single dent from that first loss, and also the manner of the loss against Douglas Lima. I think whichever way this fight goes, it's going to end up finishing in spectacular fashion. But, you know, common sense suggests that MVP wins because he's got the body of work behind him. But Richard Kiley being cheered on by 9,500 Irish fans, who knows? You know, it could be Bellator could end up with a massive star on their hands from Ireland, or MVP's back in the game again and right back on form. So it's a win-win if you're Bellator, and I think the fans are going to enjoy it as well.
Solid matchmaking. Like you said, they end up with something good. All right, man. Well, listen, hopefully you can find an Uber. That's ridiculous that you couldn't get an Uber, but if the price of pay is that you get to sit down and enjoy a Guinness, that's not the worst thing. And I guess worst thing, if it gets even worse, I mean, you're literally staring at the arena, so if you just get stuck there all night, you just keep drinking Guinness and show up tomorrow for some fights.
Rolling hot. Yeah, we could. I don't know if that's
the wisest
move I've ever made. But worse things have happened on a fight week, so it's all fine. So no, I think we'll be good. We'll get ourselves back. We've got a couple of other bits to attend to. I've got to do a burning questions feature for Bellator 228, which, I mean, you know, I'm sure you're going to talk to Kenny about that. That is an insane card of fights. That might even be the best Bellator card they've ever put together. So, you know, I think it's a massive weekend. You know, you've got the UFC in Copenhagen as well. There's a couple of sneaky good fights on that card. Cage Warriors have got to show up in Liverpool, I think. So if you really are an MMA junkie, and if you're listening to this, you probably are, then if you haven't watched at least 30 fights by a Monday morning, then you failed in your job. You should hand your junkie card in instantly.
All right, well, Simon Head has laid it down, and he's right, man. There is a ton of action going on this week. It will not be hard to watch 30 MMA fights. Before we get to the second half of the big Bellator, I guess, doubleheader, tripleheader, back-to-back days, depending on how you want to look at it with, you know, two events or three. The UFC on ESPN Plus 18 card that is taking place in Copenhagen, Denmark. It is the UFC's Danish debut, Jack Hermansson versus Jared Cannonier. Really, really good fight, man. Really important fight. You know, not necessarily number one contendership, but, man, very, very close right now. And that is a, man, that division is hot right now, isn't it, man? So many good fights in that middleweight division. And this is one of them. We won't have a ton of resources there, and that's one reason we're not spending a ton of time talking about this card. We will have MMA Junkie Pair there on Saturday taking photos of everything. So we'll have photos of all the action to go along with our recaps of everything that happens there. I will be working in the morning here, Vegas time, watching that one on ESPN Plus. You know, and it's just kind of the reality, I guess. You know, the names that are on the card. I think there's some good fights. I don't think this is a card that you should necessarily just write off and say it's not worth my time. And we'll go through it a little bit. I mean, even outside the main event, there are definitely fights that are going to be exciting and definitely fights worth watching. But you know, we had to make a call in terms of MMA Junkie resources on who we could afford to send, and there aren't a lot of the big names that are going to click big and give you a lot of return. And unfortunately, listen. We got to pay for everything, you know. We've got a budget we got to work within, so that's kind of how we ended up with minimal resources there in Denmark. I am a little gutted that I didn't go, although I'm not sure if they actually printed them or not. It's a silly reason, I admit, but I guess Denmark is the home of Lego, which I did not know. But as the father of a 7-year-old son, I'm sure fellow parents can get along with me on this. Kids love Legos. At least I know my kid definitely loves Legos. And the UFC actually came together and put together a cool little poster. They had a little Lego version of Jack, a little Lego version of Jared. They basically made a Lego person version of the poster. I don't know if they actually printed the posters, though. I think they should have gone all in on it, man. I guess maybe that idea came to them late in the game, or I don't know, maybe there were some legal issues or something that had to be cleared. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, but I thought that would have been really cool if that was the official event poster, but I saw on social media that, you know, the posters that were being signed were the ones with real photos on it, not the Lego version. I would have loved to have been there and brought home one of those autographed posters if it was the Lego version, although I don't think it was. So maybe it's all right that I'm not there. But listen, like I said, this card, I don't think it's one that you should completely write off. Jack Hermansson versus Jared Cannonier in the main event, as we said, a big fight in the middleweight division. You know, not necessarily a number one contender type fight. Of course, we know Paulo Costa is going to be in Australia for UFC 243. He's your number one contender at middleweight. There's no question about that. But, you know, you look at the MMA Junkie rankings, we've got Jack Hermansson right behind Paulo Costa at number four. We've also got Jared Cannonier at number 13, but, you know, he can certainly make a big move up the rankings here. This would be a big moment for him. And Jared Cannonier on a little bit of a run, man. I mean, what a fun guy this has been to cover, you know, dropping from heavyweight to light heavyweight and then saying he was going to go to middleweight. And we were like, come on, dude, you're not going to make it at middleweight. And then just looks like an absolute monster in the division and has picked up back-to-back wins over David Branch and Anderson Silva. So, you know, this is a big moment for Jared Cannonier. Who's been given kind of a fresh start at 185 pounds. Meanwhile, Jack Hermansson, I've been a big fan of his for a long time. Heck, if you look on MMA Junkie, his fighter profile page is still the photo that I took of him back at Venator Fighting Championships when I was on the card for that over in Italy. That was the first time I'd seen him fight in person, and I was very, very impressed. You know, he's had a couple of setbacks along the way, but in his UFC run, losing to Mutash and then losing to Mejeta, Thiago Santos, not a bad one to have on your record there, but has since rattled off four straight wins, including the big win over Jacare Souza back in April. Man, that was the big statement win where you thought, okay, you know, he nice stuff here, Joker, but you're going to come up short here, and he didn't. So this is a big moment. It's a big, big main event in terms of rankings in the middleweight division, and I think it's going to be a good fight. That one is definitely worth your time. You've kind of weaving in and out through your Bellator viewership as well over the weekend. I know there's a lot to watch, but I think that is one that's definitely worth watching. Then the way the card's constructed is a little bit interesting. Now, again, it's on ESPN Plus, so it all streams, and that means it's all immediately on demand afterwards. But they do have Mark Madsen in the co-main event. Mark Madsen, the undefeated Olympic medalist for Denmark, and you know, he's making his UFC debut here. Comes in with an 8-0 record, perfect mark, but you know, still relatively young in his MMA career. Now he's, I believe he's 35 years old, so not necessarily, you know, your typical young prospect. But when you talk about somebody that's come through the international wrestling ranks, you know that they've got some real abilities. He's in the co-main event here, which may seem like an odd idea. He's facing Danilo Belluardo, who lost in his UFC debut, and so you might say, what the hell's going on here? But you got to think about that live audience, man. That the live audience, that's going to be a big moment for them. So to put Mark Madsen in the co-main event, I think it's well played. It may not make a lot of sense to the television audience, you know. Certainly, I guess if you were just going on terms of prestige. Now, we are talking about Olympic medals here, so maybe he would deserve a main card slot. Certainly wouldn't be in the co-main, but you got to understand, from a live event perspective, I think this was absolutely the right call. You don't you know, want to waste that fight, I guess, early on. You know, you're trying to build that atmosphere. You're trying to build into that main event. You know, TV means a lot, and streaming counts along with that as well. But that live event experience still means a ton. That's how you grow the sport. And so when you're making a debut in a market, especially building it around that, makes a lot of sense. So if you're looking at that car construction and going, what the hell is going on here? I'm with the UFC 100% on that. I think they made the right call here for the live event experience. Gilbert Burns versus Gunnar Nelson. Gilbert Burns, again, stepping in on short notice, facing Gunnar Nelson. That is a hell of a fight right there. I love it. And by the way, Gilbert Burns, you know, his comments, he spoke to Christian Stein, our MMA Junkie contributor, in the lead up to this. And it sounds like the comments he's making is he's done with 155. He's staying at 170. And that's probably good, you know. Number one, he always had a brutal weight cut. Gilbert Burns is not the tallest individual, but he is thick and muscular. And I think the weight cut for him was very, very difficult. And again, you're seeing that, you know, when you're willing to fight to a more natural weight class, you know, you're able to take these short notice opportunities. And you know, I think this is a wise decision for him. You know, he did it in August against Alexei Konchenko, picked up a decision win there. He was already going to Uruguay for that fight anyway. He was going to be in the corner of Vicente Luque, but went ahead and took the fight when he was offered it. Same thing here. As soon as this open spot was announced, man, he was all over it, saying, you know, put me in there, and he got it. And I think, fighting at a more natural weight class is not only healthy for you, but it does allow you to take opportunities like this where you can step in on short notice. And this is a big moment for him against Gunnar Nelson. And Gunnar Nelson, man, I almost feel bad for him, man. You know, he was prepping for an entirely different opponent, right? I mean, this is not the fight that he thought he was going to get. He was facing Thiago Alves, who, you know, I mean, has some grappling game, but you think of him more as a striker, of course. And you know, Gunnar Nelson, a grappler at heart, so it's not as if he suddenly goes, uh-oh, I wasn't practicing any of this in the lead-up to it. But, man, this is an entirely different animal. And in my staff picks, even with Gilbert Burns coming in on short notice, man, I went with Dorino in this one. So, like I said, feel kind of, I mean, props to Gunnar Nelson for taking this fight. I mean, I'm sure he wants to not waste a training camp, so to speak. And, you know, these guys all feel confident against anybody they're facing. But, man, he is taking an entirely different type of opponent on short notice, and a dangerous one at that. So I think that's, you know, if we were doing, again, typical card construction, yeah, I'd probably make that my co-main event. But, you know, it's a good fight, and I'm excited for that one. Ian Kutalaba versus Khalil Roundtree. Come on, man. That's going to be a banger for however long it lasts. Something weird is probably going to happen. I mean, anytime Kutalaba's involved, you're going to get some kind of bizarre scenario. But, man, Khalil Roundtree, the Vegas product, man, we've long been a fan of his. He's been training out in Thailand, though. Man, how phenomenal did he look in his last outing. So, you know, that loss to Johnny Walker really kind of lit a fire under him, and he looked great in a decision win against Eric Anderson. But Kutalaba, man, that dude does not take a mixed martial arts expert to look at that guy and go, that dude is pretty dangerous. So, but he did lose last time out to Glover Teixeira, who keeps beating down these younger contenders. Prior to that, Kutalaba had a couple of first-round knockout victories, so he's very dangerous, especially early. Gas tank is certainly an issue. It has been at times for Khalil Roundtree in the past, but it was not in his last fight. So that could be an absolute banger, especially early. Mikhail Oleksiuk versus Ovince St. Preux. Nicholas Dalby versus Alex Oliveira, the Cowboy, rounding out that main card. Big story there, of course, Nicholas Dalby, man. A good dude that has been very, very open about his battle with alcoholism, battle with depression, making his return to the UFC, not getting a gimme in his return, but fighting at home in his native Denmark. Man, remember that fight he had last time out in June? What an incredible fight that was. Cage Warriors 106, if you didn't catch that one, that was his fight with Ross Houston that was declared a no contest because of excessive blood on the canvas. So if you've never seen that fight and you don't remember us talking about it back then, check out, pull up your fight pass. I know you got enough MMA to watch already this weekend, but as you're prepping yourself, check out June's Cage Warriors 106 fight, because it is a comically bloody scene. It's a scary scene, but it's comically so. Worth checking out, man. And Nicholas Dalby didn't win that fight, but still got the invitation to the UFC, man. Proved his merit in that fight, and I think that's a great call. So, listen, I'll be honest with you. I think the prelims is where it may get even more interesting. I think the entertainment value may very well be even heavier on the prelims. I do think the main card is going to be good. I mean, I just mentioned to you the things I like, and it's almost everything. But the prelims that start at 11 a.m. Eastern, or it'll be 8 a.m. Pacific right here in Las Vegas. I'll be up early for that one, working with let's see, who do I have with me that morning? We're kind of a skeleton crew. We're spread out that day. That's right. It'll be me and Nolan King doing most of the work early, and then Mike Bond is going to join us for the start of the main card, and then he'll kind of bleed over into some probably some Bellator coverage as well. But that's where we're at on that day. So it'll be a little thin, but I'll be up watching the fights. If you want to hit me up on Twitter or whatever else, I may be a little busy because we're stretched thin, but it's going to be good. And, of course, then you can watch it on demand anytime you want. But some names on here that I think could be fun. Alan Imadowski versus John Phillips. That could be fireworks. Alessa De Chirico versus the newcomer, the money team fighter, Mahmoud Muradov, fighting out of Uzbekistan, a Floyd Mayweather signee. So with an impressive career record of 22-6. C.R. Bahadurzada, come on. Who doesn't like seeing C.R. fight? And he's fighting Ismail Nardiev, who is, I think, a very talented prospect as well, fighting out of Austria, the Austrian Wonder Boy, aptly named. That could be a lot of fun. Giga Chikadze, remember him? The kickboxing stylist who was on Dana White's Contender Series, lost there. But listen, when he's in a striking match, he can be fun to watch. He's fighting Brandon Davis, who I think is far more talented than his career record indicates. I think that could be a banger. In the women's division, Macy Chiasson versus Lena Landsberg. That could be fireworks. Mark Diakese versus Lando Venata. Two incredibly exciting fighters there. Probably some weirdness going to happen in that fight as well. Of course, Lando Venata always seems to have some bizarre stuff happen. Diakese does as well. They've both got incredibly entertaining styles. As long as they're not being too patient, which could happen, and let's knock on wood right now that doesn't happen. That could be fun because those guys are both have the ability to be exciting and the ability to do some crazy creative stuff. They just don't always necessarily, you know, launch it with reckless abandon. So we'll see. And then the fight starts out, fight card starts out with Nolan Hernandez, who's a very talented fighter as well. We've seen him kind of make his way up in the regional ranks, but he's facing Jack Shore, the undefeated Welsh prospect, just 24 years old, that people have had their eye on for a long time, and he's kicking off the card. So a nice debut there. So I really honestly do believe this fight card is going to be worth your time. Maybe you catch it on delay, you know, maybe the main event. Not a lot of, you know, super impactful fights in the rankings. Again, Jack Hermanson versus Jared Cannonier definitely has some meaning at middleweight, and the winner will be in a nice position in that division. Gilbert Burns isn't there yet at 170 pounds, but this would be a big statement. And, of course, Gunnar Nelson, you know, he's had some ups and downs, and I think he'll want to prove that he still belongs. So, you know, those are probably your two in terms of immediate meaning in the division. But as far as entertainment value goes, hopefully I'm not cursing it, but I do like the stylistic matchups we have here. So I think that'll be worth your time, and we'll bring you as much as we can from out there in Denmark, and we'll have that coverage live on MMA Junkie. So, but that'll just be the way you start your day. The way you finish your day will be at Bellator 228. It is a phenomenal card. Some interesting things going on here. This featherweight Grand Prix carries on, and not only are we going to see some fights there, but then we're going to see the matchups made for the next round as well. Kind of interesting. There's going to be a selection show. Now, it's been a little bit of a pain. They've been changing up the order of the fight as far as what's considered the main event, what's not. The way it stands now, originally it was announced as Patricio Ferri versus Juan Archuleta as the main event, which would make a lot of sense. It is a featherweight tournament fight, opening round of this Grand Prix, but it also is a title fight as well. So it made sense that that would be the main event. But Bellator made a little tweak to the way they're going to do things. And after the four fights are over here, then they're going to have a selection show. And in that selection show, fighters are going – there's going to be some randomness to it as well. Fighters are going to draw for position, but then they get to draw, I guess, not for position. They get to draw as far as like a number out of the hat, and then they get to choose their matchup and where they want to fight. And so, you know, you'll start out basically drawing for position because you'll get to say – you know, the one through four will be picking where they want to fight. They'll have, you know, dates, I believe. I don't know if they'll have locations on Saturday, but they'll have dates. So, you know, do you want to fight earlier? Do you want to fight later? Are you hurt and you need some more time? Or do you want to make sure that you get your semifinal fight in, or quarterfinal fight in, I should say, so you can set up, you know, have more rest going into that semifinal. So there's a lot of it. And then after that, then you start drawing for your matchup. So, you know, a little creativity to it. I like it. It brings some fun to it. They're doing something different. And what do you got to do if you're Bellator? You got to do something different, right? You got to experiment a little bit, and that's what they're doing here. So we'll get to all that in a second. But first, today, Bellator boss Scott Coker did hold a little scrum in Los Angeles. Cole Coffey was there along with Dave Doyle handling reporting duties. And there were some good questions asked and some hot topics addressed. Josh Barnett's name was brought up. Cyborg's name was brought up. The plans to go to Japan was brought up. The plan to return to Hawaii was brought up. So lots of fun stuff here. I figure no better way to start our coverage of Bellator 228 then to start it out with the boss man talking. This is Scott Coker.
All right, guys, let's just open it up.
Hey, Scott. Josh Barnett has recently been talking about he's ready to come back, and he said he's a little irritated about not being mentioned for a big potential rise in Bellator card. Is there any update on Josh? Have you been talking to him? What's happening with
you? Well, I mean, the reason why we haven't announced it is that there's nothing finalized with Japan. If we could get that fight together in Japan with Ryzen, then we would like him to fight there. So he's kind of like in a holding pattern and to see if we can put this deal together.
And I know you mentioned, I brought up the Fedor fight possibly to you last time we talked. Is that something you'd be interested in still with Barnett?
With Barnett? I mean, yes, I think there'll be a time for that, but I don't think that will be his first fight back.
How's the draw on Saturday going to work? Is this something they're doing inside the cage? Is it backstage after the event? What's the plan with the area?
Well, from when the last fight happens for the tournament, which will be the Archuleta Pit Bull fight, then the winner will continue to move up to the stage where all the other contestants that have already fought in the tournament will be waiting for him, and then we'll start the drawing process. And I think we've already explained how the draw is going to work, but we have a couple twists in that story that make it very exciting. So I really, you know, look forward to Saturday night, and we're going to have some fireworks.
Where are you at with Ryan Bader? Because obviously there was a controversy with the Congo fight. Mm-hmm. The winner, Machida Musasi, feels like it could be a potential option. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, honestly, since Ryan fought, I haven't spoken to him. But, you know, after this weekend, we'll sit down and see what weight class he wants to go. But to me, I think, you know, fighting the winner of the Gegard fight, maybe we move up, fight him. Or if he wants to stay at heavyweight, you know, we'll have a fight for him.
I know the ink is probably still drying a little bit, but are we any closer to a debut for Chris Cyborg yet?
You'll have to tune in on Saturday. We have announcements to make. Mm-hmm.
Hey,
any chance we could see Julia Budd defend her title in Canada? We haven't had an event in Canada since 2014.
You know, it's definitely something we want to do, and I know we've talked about it a long time. You know, it's like one step at a time, but I feel really good about going to Canada and doing something in Vancouver for not just Julie, but I think there's a bunch of talented fighters up there.
Lance Gibson Jr., you guys.
Yeah, we just signed him, and there's, you know, there's some talent there. So, you know, Rory's asking me the same thing, when we're going to come up, and it's really a scheduling issue and venue issue, because the venues there are booked up, and then our schedule gets booked up, and we just haven't been able to put it together.
Speaking of champions, is there anything in the works for Lima Lee, maybe Juliana Velasquez fight coming up?
You know what? We do have something planned for her, but, you know, it's a little bit premature. We're still trying to work out the details, so that's something that we probably won't have ready for another week or so. But she will fight before the end of the year.
Is Velasquez kind of tough yet?
We're still thinking about the opponents, but, you know, her name is definitely in the mix.
Scott, what's the holdup right now with
That's a tricky question. That's a really tricky question. I mean, I personally think that we're heading in the right direction. It's gone back and forth, but you're talking about different TV rights, different sponsor rights, and you know, it's just challenging dealing with you know, a foreign country where, you know, things tend to be a little slow, where, you know, we move a little bit quicker, but, you know, it's I think it's heading in the right direction.
Are you confident that it'll happen?
When you say confident, what do you mean by that? Percentage-wise?
Percentage-wise, out of 100, what would you say?
If I was a betting man, I would put my money that it will happen.
Mm-hmm. Dan Lambert mentioned that Kyoji Horiguchi Chief Oscar 2 is going to happen on that card at the end of the year. Do you know anything?
That won't be on, if we put it together, that will not be on our card. It'll be on the New Year's Eve card. But again, it's still back and forth, trying to work out the details, because you're talking about two different companies in the same business that have different television broadcast partners all over the world, right? So we have different sponsors, if trying to iron out all the details. I think they would like to make it happen as much as we would like to make it happen, but it's going through all the fine details of it.
Would Fedor Rampage still be the targeted main event for that?
Well, that's not anywhere near signed or confirmed, but it's definitely something I think that the Japanese fans would really like.
I know it's complicated, but is there any headway on getting rid of these tape-delayed cards? I know that it happens every once in a while, but mm-hmm. I think fans would like to see them eliminated completely. Is that something you're working proactively to get rid of?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've done a great job, you know, on both the European side and here. When I talk about a year ago, I know we were getting blasted by the media saying, hey, none of our fights are being aired over there, but now they're being aired on Sky Sports, right? And then some of the UK cards will air on Paramount. But we're working on a lot of things. And I think that, you know, within the next 4 or 5 months, I think that we'll have a solution worldwide for both, you know, or all over the world, actually. We'll have an area for our fights to air. And, like, for instance, like the Japan thing, it's, you know, where does that air? You know, we're trying to figure it out, but I think that we found a solution for that here. The time frame is a little different, so we might start a little earlier. So those are the details that we're trying to, you know, work out. But listen, our commitment is to try to make it easier for the fans to watch our product. And you know, it's not always easy, but, you know, we're making headway, and I think that, you know, give us a couple months, I think we'll have a big announcement to make.
As for Bellator 228, is there someone you kind of see as the who could be the dark horse in the featherweight tournament that might not be given enough love or appreciation?
You know, I mean, listen, we got some killers up here on the stage today, and Pitbull's a champ. He's going to be the guy to knock off, right? So, you know, I give Juan a lot of credit for stepping up and, you know, presenting the challenge instead of the challenge coming to him. But, you know, Pitbull's a champ. In these types of situations, anything can happen, though, right? It's, you know, there's a lot of slick fighters here. There's a lot of seasoned veterans. You know, AJ McKee has a big task in front of him. And you can never underestimate a tournament because, you know, like I said, one wrong move or one slip and it's over. So, to me, it's like I think Pitbull is the guy to beat. But, like I said, anything can happen.
Was it difficult getting Antonio McKee on this card just because of his age and how he hasn't fought in a while? Was there a difficult thing?
You know, not really. We went through all the proper, you know, process of getting him licensed and making sure he had all the tests. And he's been bugging me for 2 years, you know, to fight on on a card with his son, and we almost pulled it off a year ago, couldn't do it, so we said, okay, we're going to do it now, and he looks in amazing shape. I just saw him. He looks in great shape, so, you know, I wish him luck. It's a great story, and I wish both fighters good luck.
Are you guys looking at any more featherweights to add to the women's division, like Kat Zingano, who's her new free agent?
Yeah, I think my guys are talking to her, and not just, you know, that particular fighter, but any free agent that's out there, you know, we're talking to everybody. And so if, you know, there's a free agent or somebody getting to free agent, to me, that's how you know what your value is going to be. So to me, it's like, you know, my guys are scouring the planet looking for the next top talent and talking to all the free agents. And, you know, we're going to be here and we'll be active bidder for everybody's talent.
Once it's actually booked, Cyborg and Julia Budd, where do you think that would rank in terms of best fights of all time in Bellator history? Because we haven't had a situation like this really in a while where, you know, someone comes over, a huge free agent from the UFC, and fights a, you know, homegrown Bellator champion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, listen, that it would definitely be special. And but I think there's going to be more to come. You know, I think that fighters are going to be looking for the best deal possible. And, you know, I think that's going to require them to, you know, to move around. And it's going to go both ways. It's going to go this way to that way. It's going to come this way, and who, you know, like it's not just going to be one way. But we're gonna do our best to keep building this roster. And if you look at this roster 3 years ago, 4 years ago, it looks nothing like it does today. And I think there's been a lot of hard work on our guys, not just you know, finding the free agents and buying from the top down, but also building from the ground up, which I think that we're very good at. So, you know, that's the future.
Speaking of free agents, Rashad Evans has announced he's looking to come back, and he's got a history with quite a few guys under the Bellator banner. Mm-hmm. Any interest in bringing him aboard?
Yeah, you know what? I think my guys talked to him, but I'm not sure. We haven't, you know, there hasn't been any serious discussions or anything like that. We've been focusing on the LA fight and, you know, trying to work out the fight in Japan and Hawaii and different obligations that we have. But, you know, I know that his manager's reached out, and I think there's some type of dialogue, but, you know, who knows?
Did Bellator go back to Hawaii this
year? I believe so. We're working on it. Yeah, working on it. Yeah, that's the plan. And, you know, it just makes a lot of sense in the routing. We go to, you know, go to Hawaii, then go to Japan, and, you know, just make it a 2 or 3 week run. Because if we, you know, when we go to Hawaii, we're still going to do a Friday and Saturday night show. We'll do the Friday night for the troops, and then Saturday will be the DAZN fight. So that's still in the plans, and it's just we're still working out the date.
All right, that was Bellator boss Scott Coker, and now we bring in Scott Coker's long-lost cousin. It's Cole Coffee.
that's the main reason I'm growing the beard out, so people will stop assuming that that me and Scott Coker are one and the same. You
know? That's awesome, man. Well, listen, before we get into Bellator real quick, I just want to make sure that people know what you're going through right now. Now, you are in Los Angeles, of course. You are covering the second half of this big Bellator event, but you are also going to Australia, and you will also be flying through Los Angeles. So on Sunday, when this event is over, you will fly home to Las Vegas, do your laundry, repack everything, and then fly back to Los Angeles on your way to Sydney, on your way to Melbourne.
Yeah, sounds good. You know, it's better than the alternative. One, I'm not so independently wealthy that I can just buy new clothes.
Right.
And I'm also a creature of habit, so I always wear the same clothes. So it'll be good. It'll be good to go home and, you know, just relax for a minute, even though it does mean turning right back around and coming through LAX. But, you know, those, yeah, I mean, you know what it's like, just get those small moments of, sitting on your couch for a moment and, you know, do the laundry, catch up with the family. It's funny because, old Agent H was like already asked me, like, well, what time do you get home on Sunday? I'm like, dude, you can't already take my day, the short day off that I have. I was like, no. She's like, well, you have to leave early, don't you? I was like, yeah. She's like, okay, I guess I'll leave you alone. I was like, yes, please. I was like, I swear, it's like clockwork, you know? It's just like, oh, when you home? Oh, okay, I already got three to-do list things.
Nope, not this time. Not this time.
not this one. So, well, but cool. I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward to get back over to Australia, man. That's gonna be a fun one. The fight's gonna be good, but it'd be good to get back to our Australian friends and family over there. So.
No doubt, man. It hasn't been the same without you being there. So it'll be fun. All right, let's talk about Bellator 228. Yeah, we heard from Scott Coker there, the scrum that you guys were in. You know, Scott Coker is a master of not making announcements until he's ready to make an announcement. But you know, there were some interesting topics there. Josh Barnett versus Fedor Emelianenko potentially. I think he kind of hinted that, you know, more announcements with Cyborg coming on Saturday night. Of course, mentioned Alimele McFarland and then mentioned Hawaii. And then kudos to Casey Lydon from MMA Fighting for following up. It does sound like they're going to go back to Hawaii in December. I know that that you and I are both probably have our fingers crossed that we can do a trip to Hawaii again. That wouldn't be bad in the middle of December. And then, you know, also kind of like the hints of well, he talked about Japan as well, and then the hints of maybe some kind of new broadcast platform of some kind to get everything on the same, you know, time schedule and being able to watch it live and not have to do all this channel flipping and all that stuff. So, like I said, yeah. I know he doesn't break a lot of news, but anything that from that specifically that perked your ears up the most?
Well, you know, it's funny, and even when he said, you know, with the whole channel thing and the timing. You know, he seemed to make it say that it would be closer, you know, like it's not going to be perfect. You know, you can't ever make anything, you know, everybody happy. But I thought that was pretty cool that, you know, that they're at least listening to people and they're trying to address it. I mean, kudos to them for that. You know, I think a lot of times different organizations, you know, hear things from their fans, but tend to take them for granted,
right.
You know, and it seems that Bellator is paying attention and trying to do that sort of thing. So I thought that was pretty cool. I love the fact that, I mean, I love Bellator's, you know, outside of the fact that Hawaii's beautiful there and they have incredible spam musubi. I love the fact that they still make it a big point to try to reach out and do things with the troops.
Yeah.
I love that they make that a big focus. And I was happy to hear that they were, you know, hoping to do something by the end of the year. That would be very, very cool. But, you know, you're right. He's good at not telling things. But it's funny because he seems to come in a lot of these things. He knows people are going to ask stuff and he knows that he doesn't want to say it. So sometimes he has like I don't want to call it a chip on his shoulder, but he's kind of just like, come at me. You know, come at me. I ain't gonna give you anything. And he kind of gets that little smirk or a little side smile, you know, and he's like, you know, I'll give you just enough, but I'm not gonna. But you know, even talking about Bader, you know, and I could tell that he does not sound like he is keen on any sort of Bader Congo rematch. Uh-huh. I think he just wants to let Bader just kind of do his thing and let that division go. And I love the fact that he's just kind of, he lets fighters in a sense dictate what they want, as opposed to, I mean, I'm sure that they have their own little agenda, but he seems to do really well of coming off like saying that it feels like it's more the fighter's ideas. When the fighter's ready to fight, they come up with a fight and they just find a good location for it, you know? Whereas, you know, a lot of times when you hear Dana and a lot of the UFC talk, a lot of times it's, you know, we're going to find a fight that makes sense for him. You know, as right. opposed to, you know, listing kind of what the fighter's asking for.
That's a fair
I mean,
point.
If there's enough fight, if enough fighters are chirping about it and there's heat, of course, the UFC is going to do it. You know, if Conor and Khabib are like, this is the fight to happen, this is the fight to happen, of course, the UFC is going to make it happen because both fighters are doing it. But, you know, you hear a lot of times fighters asking for stuff and it just somehow falls to the wayside. But I like the fact that it seems to, Bellator seems to work with that a little bit better than I think some other organizations. They have a little more freedom, I guess, to do it. And he seems to make it seem like this show Saturday, we're going to have a lot of little like quirky things. He didn't even really want to come off to how the whole bracket picking. He's like, oh, we got some twists. We got some things. And he come and said, bro, it's a bracket thing. Like, what is it going to be like flaming pits that they have to swing through or something? Like, he's keeping it pretty close to the hill, and it might be because part of it is going to be tied in with maybe somebody else showing up, some other thing that's going on. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they do, you know, and they love to have fighters be there for a fight announcement. So I imagine if we're seeing Cyborg and Julia Budd in the audience, you know, that we're going to get an announcement. But maybe something else is going to happen that, you know, maybe we'll see some guest people that maybe are partaking in this selection thing that he doesn't want to let it out of the bag yet, you know, because it, I don't know, but it should be interesting. I'm kind of interested to see how that's all going to play out. You know, most of the fighters, even talking with the guys in interviews, a lot of them, you know, of course, you know, there is the ones that were like Pitbull. Pitbull's the guy, you know, that I would ask next because they see the title right there. They know that they can have their hands on it. Whereas there's other ones that are just like, you know, it's not, you know, until I know he's even there, I don't even want to think about it because right. I got to think about what's going to happen Saturday. I got to take care of that before I can do it, which makes a lot of sense, you know? So it's interesting, you know, I didn't get a lot of feel on this particular time around. Of course, a lot of them, you know, talk about the money and how the money is important, but it didn't feel as important to a lot of these cats as opposed to the belt or like the personal challenge. And it could have been just maybe the way that, you know, when we caught them, maybe if we, you know, phrase it differently, they'd talk more about the money, but just in these particular batch of fighters that we saw so far this week, you know, it's about that title and it's about challenging that best guy. And of course they, you know, they're going to spend that money, you know, I think it was Corrales. We're like, you know, what are you going to do with the money? And he's like, you know, I'm not quite sure, but I will tell you one thing, I'm going to spend it, you know? So it's interesting, but you know, I like this tournament and I like the fighters that are in it, man. It is a fun tournament and it makes it fun to cover. I mean, I know a lot of times people are like, oh man, you know, UFC, that's the fights I'm going to watch. You know, I mean, these Bellator tournament cards, man, are sharp. Like yeah. These main cards are a lot of fun with a lot of stuff riding on it. You know, I think Bellator has done a decent job with this like thing, you know, where of course, if it was a one night tournament, you know, there's going to be a lot of interest because people are going to be glued to the TV to see how it happens. This kind of does that a little bit where it's giving, you know, a little bit of excitement because you already know what's coming out of it. So people know that what's at stake. I think everybody knows that if a fighter needs to win, you know, to kind of keep moving towards a higher ranking, you know, towards the belt, but that's all sort of things you don't really kind of know for sure what's going to happen. Whereas here, you know, if you win, you are moving on the next bracket and you are guaranteed one step closer to getting that title, you know, so it's adding a little bit of excitement. And so these are fun, man. These have been pretty cool chatting with these guys and knowing that you're seeing guys whose lives literally can be changing in a huge amount in like two more fights.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Before I talked to you, I was talking about the, you know, the card in Copenhagen, and I was saying that, you know, I think the card in Copenhagen is a good card. I think there's a lot of good fights on it. But in terms of like, you know, what really means something moving forward, it's basically the main event. It's basically Hermansson and Cannonier, right? And what you're saying is kind of like what you and I have been talking about the PFL, how, you know, even though sometimes the PFL might not have the quality matchups or whatever, you know, the same caliber all the way through of athletes. I mean, not that they don't have some great athletes, they do, but maybe the names aren't as recognizable or what have you. The cards are kind of fun because they're all linked together and you know what it means. Like, you know that it's going to create some more matchups and it's going to create some more meanings. And this featherweight tournament, I mean, all these tournaments, that's exactly what they do. Now, this featherweight tournament especially is phenomenal. I mean, the level of talent that's in it. You know, you look at the names that have already advanced to the quarterfinals, Pedro Carvalho, Derek Campos, Adam Borix, Emmanuel Sanchez. I mean, those are all great names. And then these matchups here, you said at Pitbull and Archuleta, that's a sick fight. Darian Caldwell versus Henry Corral.
That's a crazy fight.
Yeah.
That's a good fight.
Saul Rogers, Daniel Weichel is a good fight. And Georgia Karakanyan versus AJ McKee, I love that fight too. So, I mean, big, big fights here. And as you said, man, they're all tied together. They all have stakes. It's a really good tournament, man, and I am excited about it. But you touched on the and I mentioned the process earlier, and let me just, because I'll be I won't say I don't understand it yet. I do understand it, I think. But here's what I'm curious about. And I'll read. This came exactly from a press release. If anybody doesn't understand, this is the exact language from a press release, because I think I did a pretty crap job of explaining it earlier. But it says, once the quarterfinals are ready, once all the fighters are set, the fighters will begin by drawing a random number in the order in which they competed in their respective opening round bouts, with Emmanuel Sanchez set to pick first. This number will dictate the order in which they select their desired slot in the bracket, beginning with number one. Seeing the upcoming event dates and any previous picks made, and with the help of a coach or training partner, they'll be allowed on stage with the fighter to consult. A decision must be made on, is the date of the next round the most utmost importance? Do you take an easier opponent to try and advance the next round? Or do you go toe-to-toe with a fierce rival right away in pursuit of a world title? So that's the official language for the press release. I think I get it. I think I understand. I think once I see it in practice, it's going to be a little easier to comprehend. But you said it. I mean, you talked to a lot of these guys. Do they seem to have strategies, or is this going to be like some random free-for-all? Like, is there a smart way to play this, or does anybody really necessarily fully comprehend?
You know, I think they get it. I think a lot of them realize that until they get to that point, you know, strategy can go out the window. I mean, it's hard to strategize, because when you think about it in, starting, even in the chance of when they're getting the opportunity to pick, you're already starting to sort of limit your opportunities. And it's not like every particular person that gets in there has a clean slate of what they want to pick. The options get less and less every time somebody makes a pick. So when Sanchez goes up there, he has the opportunity to, for the most part, pick his slot, and he's just picking his time. He's picking his, maybe his place, if that's even an option. I think it just mainly the dates.
Yeah, that's what I think.
So he has the option of just saying, when do I want to fight? When am I going to feel that I'm at my best? And then he's going to put his name in a slot. So the next person that gets up there and picks now has the fun option of saying, okay, I see Sanchez there. My next fight, I'm going to take Sanchez. Or they're going to be like, okay, I want a date. I don't want to fight him. Let me find what works for me. And so for the first grouping of individuals, I don't really anticipate that we're going to even see any particular matchups, because I think most people, unless there's a person that they feel that they can cleanly just starch, I don't think anybody's going to really pick anybody. I think they're going to be picking a particular date that's open that works for them until it gets to the point that all the date slots, or at least a lot of the slots, are taken up, that somebody then at that point has to pick a person.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that we're going to get a lot of just initial dates. And unless somebody, breaks the norm, you know, and just goes up and says, okay, this guy that's already on the board, I want him, you know. So it'll be interesting. I think what we're going to start to see where the strategy really is going to come is once some of those spots have been taken, because then somebody's going to be like, okay, I see where he's at, and I know if I take this next fight, he's going to be the winner of that. Or,
yep.
You know, so then I think we'll see. Right now, I think it's just too far in advance. And until you start seeing some names fall on the board, I think most people are probably just going to go in there thinking, okay, when am I going to feel the best after this fight? How long do I need to get back to an optimal point to where I can fight? And what's the closest date that can get to that?
Yep.
And then I think that's the smart way, and the, probably the only way that most people are going to go. And then it's going to get to a point where, you know, somebody's just going to have to pick him. And I'd have to draw a bracket in front of me to see when that is, what number person that will be, to where those options are going to be like, okay, now we got to start picking people. I don't know, that to where, you know, or fourth or fifth, you know.
Should be number five, I guess. I mean, if it goes as you said, because there's eight, so if it goes as you said, and I'm kind of with you, I feel like the first four are probably just going to pick spots. And then maybe right. Number five through eight, that's when they start, that making matchups. But we could be surprised. Maybe number two comes out to shoot. Number three comes out to shoot.
That's it.
You know?
That's right. If somebody sees somebody that maybe they beat like twice before, because a lot of these guys have history and have past fights with these guys, they might just think, oh, dude, he's easy money. I'm gonna get him back out and just progress forward, as opposed to taking a fight with somebody they've never seen before. If it makes sense. So, yeah, I mean, and because we got, what, four winners from the first week?
That's right.
So say we take that first week, and then you know once Pitbull, I mean, if he's forced to have to take, say he wins, that is, he's going to be coming in, and he's going to be able to, if he's the one that has to pick a person, he's going to pick the one he's best, that he thinks best. But once he's on the board, if there is a possibility that there is an open time slot that he can pick it, he's going to be immediately chosen by the person after, I guarantee.
If he gets number one, if for whatever reason he gets the number one seed and he gets to go first, then I guarantee you number two just goes right after him.
Yeah, I mean, because at that point you are the title holder, and then it's just fun and gravy, and you get to, you know, hold it. But your name at that point is in the history books.
Yeah.
You've created a legacy for yourself, you know, at that point.
I was going to say, that's the bright side. I guess from a cynical point of view, and this is just a guess, I don't know, I wonder if people have championship kickers in their contracts, or if they basically just had to sign a contract for the tournament that doesn't escalate if you win. Because obviously everybody wants to win the championship, you know, for the legacy and for what it means, but also because it usually means more money in this situation.
Right.
I don't know if it would or not. I don't know.
I mean, that would have to be something, you know, that may be specific for this, because I forget who it was that mentioned it today. I got the impression they were thinking it's more money.
Yeah.
So I don't know if maybe there is a particular phrasing into it. Maybe not, because why would him? Because then it's, you know, they're still aiming for it, and it's still a title defense. So it's not like it's a lesser title defense that you shouldn't get more money by being the champ.
Right.
So maybe they didn't put a kicker on it. Maybe they just said, you know, when you, it still goes like probably what the original contract, which states, you know, something along the lines of, if you get the title, we negotiate you a champion's contract, you know, and I imagine that would probably still stand. I would hate to think that they'd be like, okay, you're going to enter this tournament, but if you win the championship, you have to stick to your current one.
That's true. That wouldn't be right.
Even though we're good, it wouldn't be right, because they're going to market the shit out of them.
Yeah, you're right. They got
to have to do more stuff.
Yeah, they got to have an escalator in there, because that wouldn't be right. Like, hey, by the way, you're the champ, and you make 20 and 20 next time. Like, come on, that's not cool.
Right. Like, say Archuleta takes it, and then he's got, what, two more fights?
Right.
Or three more fights?
Three more, yeah.
You're saying you're not going to give him a pay boost for three more fights?
Yeah, that can't be right.
That wouldn't be right.
Well, dude, listen, I'm intrigued by it. It's exciting, man. I think this is a good concept they came up with. I think it's going to make it fun, you know, on Saturday night to see what happens and see how everybody slots it out. I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, and I'm fired up for it, man. I think the tournament's going to be good.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, you hate to call it like a gimmick, but it's like, you know, when you say like Bellator's found a good gimmick, you know, they found a good idea. I mean, they found a way. I mean, like, even like when we talk about PFL, you know, and finding those points, I think anything that you can find a way to engage your audience and get them, you know, something they could follow along with, you know, they can keep track if they want. It's something new, man. It's something different, man. So kudos to them. And, you know, every fighter we've talked to has been into it, you know, and even, you know, it always raises the idea in some fighters' minds of, you know, they want the multiple fight one night, you know, tournament to come back, you know, so that's crazy too.
Those people are crazy.
They are crazy. I mean, well, these people fight in a cage for a living, John, so they're all a little bit off.
fair play. All right, let's talk about, I guess, what's the main event now. I will say this. It's been a little maddening with Bellator. They move fights around, even the main events around. I mean, it makes sense. They want to do the tournament and then have the tournament selection show, and then they'll end the night with Machida and Musasi. But coming in this week, it was supposed to be Pitbull and Archuleta that was the main event. But it looks like it's Machida and Musasi now. Of course, these two have some history. Musasi has made it clear he is not a big fan of Lyoto Machida. Not a lot of people have bad things to say about Machida, but Musasi is definitely one of them. And Musasi had an interesting take this week that he's basically just went a little more, or a little less intense this training camp. He felt that was the best approach. So what do you take from these two guys this week? I mean, certainly guys that we're both familiar with.
Yeah, the less is more concept. That's my always my approach when it comes to working out and all that good stuff. But you know what's interesting? Machida also, you know, he's always the consummate professional. You know, like it's funny because I thought maybe we'd see a little, you know, shit talking at the open workout day. But no, he was very reserved. You know, he did say he was going to go out looking for that quick knockout or whatever. And even with Sasi, you know, he was like, I don't want to talk shit. But, you know, he did still sort of jab out there about how Brazilians are dirty fighters and, you know, cheaters. But I'm not going to say anything.
No, no. With all due respect, you're a piece of shit.
With all due respect. Yeah. With all due respect, you're a dirty cheater. But, you know, they are big names. They are, you know, both former champs. So it makes sense that they are one of the last fights. But, you know, the fight before that is the one I think most people are the most intrigued about and most into. And I think, you know, we always coin the phrase, you know, the people's fight of the night, you know, like that's the fight I think more people are going to be interested into as opposed to Machida Massasi, which maybe has contender, you know, ramifications. But besides that, I mean, like, we're seeing the title fight right before that. That's right. What people are going to be looking at. I think most people, if they don't really follow the card or the sport, and they're just coming because there's an event here in town, they're going to see a title fight, and then they're going to see this, and they're probably going to be confused that it's not a title fight or right. something, that it's the bigger, that it's the main event. But I just think that Pitbull Archuleta fight is going to be fireworks, where this one, I think you're going to probably, the first round is going to be a product of probably a lot of feeling out processes. And I just don't foresee like the Pitbull Archuleta is going to have a lot of feeling out. I think even though they are very respectful and friendly with one another, I think that one's going to be a lot more fireworks than probably what we're going to see in the latest main event, if you will, or yeah. the last fight on this televised broadcast part. I don't know. It's going to be good. I mean, I just wonder, I mean, like Machida, he doesn't show a lot in his open workouts. You know, it was very light. You know, you're watching him stretching. He still looks incredible, but you know, the age has got to start catching up at some point, you know? And, you know, it's kind of an end of an era. This is a guy that I've always respected because he always has been a sort of a beacon of martial arts and like one particular martial arts, you know, whereas now the kids coming up, we're going to be seeing less and less kids that say, okay, I was a karate kid or right. I was a taekwondo. Most of these kids now are all starting mixed martial arts, as their discipline and when they're starting. So it's kind of, you know, it's starting of an end of an era where we're going to be seeing these guys that started in one particular discipline finishing their fighting days. And then we're only going to be having these fighters that hybrids, have always yeah. done it,
yep.
you know? So it's interesting. Yeah. So it's just watching him when he was like, doing his stretching out, and I was seeing some of the grimacing when he's stretching. I was like, dude, that's what I look like when I stretch out. I was like, I'm feeling like Machida's feeling his age when he was doing that, but he still looks absolutely incredible. You know, it's just interesting. You know, but I think if there is a fight, and especially if there is a little bit of heat, that is something that will keep somebody interested into a fight and keep them, you know, one as a fan glued to the TV, but also I think it keeps the fighters into it as well and gives them some excitement. I mean, these guys have been fighting a lot. I mean, look at Massasi, his record, what, 45-7-2.
Insane.
Machida, 26-8. That's that's just a crazy amount of fights between these two. I mean, there's a lot of experience going to be going in there, you know, but both of them, you know, seem to think that they're still improving. They're still growing. Gegard thinks he's been improving more. Machida, you know, thinks Machida, he's already seen everything that he can out of Machida. And I think that's probably what Vitor Belfort and everybody thought back in the day. And, you know, and other people that have fought him and haven't done well. I don't know. It should be interesting, but I did pick Massasi in this one. I just feel we're starting to get to the point where I think youth is going to start winning, and he's fighting better. Yep. I think recently, I think his head's better in the game.
Yep.
So I think youth, and with his head in the game, I think he's just going to be a little too much for Machida, but who knows, man, Machida's able to pull out some shit, man, that just, leaves you just like shaking your head. So could we see it one more time? There's always a possibility. I mean, there's always a possibility, and that's exciting enough, wondering if we're going to see something like that. But if we see a whole bunch of just clinching against the cage, fighting for position, people are going to be over it really, really quickly. So yeah. I hope that's not what we get.
Yeah, both those guys can be counter strikers, you know. So it's let's hope it's exciting, because as you said, man, Pitbull versus Archuleta just has fireworks written all over it, man. And I'd hate for it. Like in my head, as you were talking about it, I was kind of playing it out. I was like, man, I wonder if they should have just like done the selection show with, you know, seven winners and then have like a gold belt as the number one seed or something. You know what I mean? Where, okay, we know this is either going to be Pitbull or Archuleta. I mean, I guess that would, you know, screw them out of the opportunity to potentially pick a date or potentially pick an opponent. But I wonder if that would have made it, you know, a little bit better. But we'll see. It's still going to be fun to play out. Let me ask you real quick about kind of the secondary storylines. If either one of, I think the biggest kind of secondary, you know, marketing angles or storylines that are going around that aren't being heavily focused on, but are certainly there, are either the debut of Ava Knight, the former world boxing champion, or, of course, the return of Antonio McKee and seeing father and son fight on the same card, which is pretty cool. And, of course, you know, AJ McKee is a stud, and Antonio McKee is, you know, he was a grinder for years and years that tried to make his way to the big stage and wasn't always the most exciting guy, but I think is certainly responsible for a lot of the success that body shop team has had. So as far as on the ground there in LA, are either one of those storylines kind of standing out to people, or at least to you personally, are you getting a good feel of any of it?
I would say, but the people that I've seen, it's more of the father son thing. Yeah. I think the whole Ava's just flying under the radar, and maybe that's just the fact that maybe Bellator should have pushed that out a little bit more. But really, I haven't really heard many people talking about Ava Knight. She didn't have a huge amount of media interviewing her, but obviously I wasn't watching her the whole time. But I think just the story of the, you know, Antonio and AJ, a father and son fighting on the same card, you know, both of them are cornering each other. I don't know, maybe that's partially too, because, you know, as a male who had a bond with a father, that sticks out in my head more,
right,
than, you know, maybe, you know, another athlete from another sport jumping into a different discipline that's another combat sport. We've seen boxing champs come over into Bellator. So for me, it's not as exciting as seeing a father-son duo, you know, the possibility of, you know, two knockouts, you know, from, you know, a father, and then goes out there and then he corners his son and his son can get a knockout. You know, it just seems there's more excitement there. But again, I'm also a guy, so maybe I bond with the father-son thing more. So it rings truer to me. But I think it's just the fact that we've seen a boxer crossover, so it's not as exciting. It's not as new and shiny as it was before when we saw others come over.
Yep.
You know, but I'm excited to see. I'm excited. And in talking with her today, I loved her energy and her personality. And I'm looking forward to seeing. She had just had a great sort of attitude about it. You know, if she didn't get the knockout, you know, maybe I'll finish in the submission. If I don't get a submission, maybe I'll grind out a decision. You know, but she's focused the right way. I mean, if she's able to make it to a championship boxing level, she's got to be a stud, you know, and she's going to come at it with a whole different mindset than most athletes. Same thing when we always talk about Henry Cejudo, which, if you didn't know, he was an Olympic champion.
What?
Yeah, I know. Shocking. But they, you know, when you get, I think anybody that reaches to a championship level, they have a different mindset. They have a different work ethic. So I think seeing her coming in, it's going to be incredible. So I'm looking forward to seeing what she can do, looking to see how her hands are, you know, and also just to see the things different, you know. And even when Dave was talking to me, it brought up things I didn't really think about, you know, where, you know, if he's maybe a certain boxing stance that might put you in a different position to where you're maybe susceptible to a single leg or somebody coming in for a double leg. You know, there's different challenges that she's had to address, you know, coming in it. So that's kind of interesting to see how she's going to look coming in. I mean, she's early on in the evening. So she's kind of helping to kick off the show, but you know, still just seeing a proud father talk about his son and the son being proud of his father. And also, I mean, it was cool, man. And people have been clamoring to it. I think people have been, really interested to see how that goes. And they're both good talkers.
Yeah.
You know, they both could talk. So, I mean, it's hard to not kind of, once they start talking, to kind of just kind of be mesmerized a little bit as they're talking about it. But it's cool, man. It's neat to see the father-son bond growing in front of your eyes when you're watching two people. And, you know, I got to go fishing with my dad. I mean, we never got a chance to go fight together, and whether it be a street fight or a bar fight or anything, you know. So it's kind of cool, you know, what these guys are being able to do. So and people are picking up on it. It's resonating, I think, with a lot of people.
Yeah, I think the big thing to monitor on fight night is just going to be, I mean, win or lose for Antonio, you got to think that's going to be an emotional experience for AJ, the son, you know, and he's got to be out there early, you know, fighting later. So man, that's going to be interesting for me to monitor. I mean, I can't imagine, like you said, man, the father-son bond, the type of emotion, win or lose, that's going to extract from AJ, during Antonio's
fight. And he's
going to
be cornering.
I know.
So, I mean, he's getting there early, and to be that close, it's a whole nother thing, I think, to watch it on TV, be in the back, being sort of shielded from it a little bit, than to have it right in your face and, you know, hearing the crowd getting caught up. And that's going to be a big, huge emotional rush for him. And I think it can fuel him. If it goes the right way, it's going to fuel him, and he's going to be very, very excited, but still going to have to kind of control those energy and his emotions. But it's interesting, man. I applaud them both for even trying to do that. I mean, it's one thing to fight, but also both of them are trying to corner each other and do all that other kind of stuff, man. That's some superhuman type shit.
It's going to be intense, man. It's going to be intense. I guess, you know, the other things on there, the return of AJ Agazarm is on there. He's an interesting character and certainly got some skill, a notable name. Sean Bunch versus Leandro Higo should be actually just a really good fight, man. Two talented fighters there. So, you know, the prelims, Bellator always has their local ticket sellers in there. They're kind of, you know, forgettable, I guess, in terms of a national audience. But there's a couple little gems on the undercard, but the main card is going to be insane. And man, just, oh, the amount of fights that they're putting on over the course of 2 days on two different continents. It's, man, quite the undertaking that Bellator's starting to do.
Yeah, man, they're crazy. And they were even talking about that for the Hawaii, man. They're talking about doing the Hawaii and then going to, like, Japan or something after. But I do want to give a shout-out to Saul Rogers, who said he was a huge MMA junkie fan.
That's what's
up. But he also did criticize the fact that our app sucks and that he doesn't like the fact that our website doesn't work like it should over in the UK. But he was happy when we came up and said we were from Junkie, and he was like, "Oh yeah, man." He's like, "That's my favorite." And I was like, "Well, shit, now I got to pick you. Now I got to root for you." I don't think I swapped my pick, but deep down inside, I'm rooting for him. At least I think I picked Daniel on that one. Well, I think that might have been one of the ones where I went opposite of others. But
better reach out to Matt Erickson.
Now I might have to reach out and swap my pick. But, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool, you know.
That is cool. I do always like to hear it. I mean, look, at the end of the day, we're just doing a job. But it's kind of nice when you hear that, you know, that they're feeling it, you know what I mean? That they're appreciating mm-hmm. what you do. It is nice to have that every now and then. We're not, you know, pandering to them. If they hate us, they hate us sometimes, but it is kind of nice to hear that they like your work.
It is cool.
No doubt. All right, man. Well, listen, I know, speaking of liking your work, I know you still got more work to do, so I won't take any more of your time. I appreciate you carving some out. You'll be covering Bellator 228 on Saturday with Mr. Dave Doyle will be there. And then, you'll fly home, and we'll hook up at McCarran Airport, and we'll make the journey down to Melbourne, Australia.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Yep, it'll be another busy week, and of course, we'll have all that. I don't know what we're gonna do for and a half this week. We've been doing pretty strong with it, but I don't even know how the hell you recap three cards. So we'll see how that plays out. But we'll definitely have a lot of fun down in Australia. That should be good, and we'll see how that all plays out. In the meantime, we'll just tell everybody, thanks for listening.